Hey everybody, Chris here. This is obviously our first episode, so there were the inevitable technical difficulties. The sound quality isn't super great. We had a microphone issue, and it has since been hopefully resolved. But if you can just bear with us through some of the technical nonsense, please enjoy our review of some good and terrible, terrible Batman movies. Thanks.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
Joy get him!
I know, right?
I am the law!
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
Who's all is really?
Comic Zombie.
From the 1960s, when Adam West danced his way into our hearts with giant fake bombs, shark repellent hanging off of helicopters, to Zack Snyder's 21st century version of Murderbot Batman. There have been a number of different iterations of the character that have made it up to the big screen over the years. Today we're going to talk about the period from the late 80s to mid 90s, where he was king of the superheroes, to the biggest example of what not to do when making a superhero film. We're talking about Batman.
So we're going to start with 1989's Batman, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton as Batman, Jack Nicholson as the Joker, and Kim Basinger as Vicki Vale.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Batman's war on crime in Gotham truly begins when he crosses paths with the freakish Joker. His dual life is complicated by his new relationship with prize-winning photojournalist Vicki Vale.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Wait till they get a load of me.
So, Batman kills a lot of people in this movie.
Dude, he kills so many people in this movie.
Like, a ton of people.
I don't remember exactly, but I think he might actually kill more people, confirmed on-screen kills, than the Joker does.
Yeah, I think you're right
there. Like, that's bananas.
It's pretty crazy.
Okay, look, you're making an American action film in the 1980s, like, your guy's gotta kill some people, right?
You gotta,
like,
blow some stuff up.
Well, you think about, like, what else is popular at the time, and it was mostly, right, like, the one guy just murdering his way wholesale through the bad guys, like, you know, Schwarzenegger and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, the fact that he kills people is not so much what bothers me, because, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I think it kind of, like, ignores a famous tenet of the character, but it's only really famous to people who read the comic books. Like, I mean, if you see the cartoons, you don't think Batman's killing people because it's a cartoon, and they generally shy away from that. But, you know, if your exposure to Batman is you remember him vaguely from when you were a kid, or you remember him from merchandise you see at Walmart or whatever, and you just kind of know who he is, and you're going to see a movie in 1989, and there's all these dudes shooting at him, and he's just tying him up and running away, like, that doesn't really work in that late 1980s America for the public.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, he kills a ton of people.
Speaking of killing, he also kills the Joker at the end.
Look, here's the thing. I get, again, like, that's like the kind of the wrapping the bow on the thing, because Tim Burton, you know, has famously said that he never read Batman comics, right, and he didn't really care about that, and, like, again, like, the way that these movies were made back then is way different than how they're made now. But you had to know, unless they were just refused to bring Jack Nicholson back because they knew the price tag would be so absurdly high to get him to come back for a sequel to anything, if they could even get him to come back. But I don't understand the choice to kill the Joker. It totally hamstrings the rest of the franchise moving forward.
And they didn't even kill him in, like an ambiguous way, like, oh, maybe he'll come back.
Yeah.
They dropped him off a skyscraper.
Bro, they dropped him off the tallest fucking church of all time. Like,
and you saw his body.
He's lying there broken on the sidewalk, like, and this weird little machine, like an automatic laugher or something. Like, it makes no fucking... It's creepy, honestly. When I was a kid, it weirded me out.
Yeah, it gave me nightmares.
It's just really... I don't know. It's a very odd choice.
Well, and Jack Nicholson was a perfect Joker, I think. for his time. You know, he really embodied great. That character. He was threatening, but he was also kind of funny. You know, and I
isn't figure that just Jack Nicholson?
Right, he was playing himself for sure. Yes, yeah. But. They probably were like, well, we're not going to get him back for the next one, so we better kill him off.
See, I'm not even sure they thought, let's make this with the idea of making a next one. I think point. That Warner That's Brothers, they mark... Okay, so...
It's way before the age of franchises.
Yeah, and, like, yeah. This movie was one of the first to really capitalize on that. Like, this movie was, like, a cultural event. I mean, it was hyped for... It was, like, one of the first movies where they released... teaser footage, mm-hmm. not like a trailer, but like there was like it's like an Entertainment Tonight or TMZ kind of show back in the day, and they showed like a sizzle reel, like basically just kind of like loose clips from the movie.
Yeah.
No like soundtrack or anything, but people lost their minds. There was so much hype behind this.
I clearly remember the Diet Coke commercial.
Hello, Gotham Corner Store. Yes, we seem to be down to our last Diet Coke. A gentleman is on his way to pick some up. Just look for a black car. No, this black car will be rather difficult to miss. And by the way, the gentleman is usually in quite a rush. Just for the taste of it,
Diet Coke. So, you know, a lot of people grew up with this as their Batman. A lot of other people, it was the first time they had seen the version they grew up with, which was probably the comic book version, kind of more really brought to life. It is, of course, a step closer to what everybody always wanted than anything that had come before. But there are some things that maybe don't work so well in it. So with that in mind, like, what are some things that you liked? And then, like, what are some things that maybe you didn't like so much? So for me, I like the look of the film. Like, I like... the gothic architecture.
I love that, like, Gotham City's a character in the movie. You know, I think they really nailed that.
Yeah, the only downside to that is, and it's kind of a catch-22, part of it I really dig and part of it kind of irritates me, but there's so many scenes where it's clearly just set on a back lot and yeah. has matte paintings. And the matte paintings are awesome.
Yeah.
And I dig that old-timey, I guess now it would be, yeah. but, you know, that method of filmmaking, I think it for looks sure. cool. It's visually appealing.
Yeah.
So I think the movie looks good. I like that Gotham's always dark, and it's always rainy or cold as hell looking, and there's always, you know, steam coming out of the sewers. It's always, yeah, it's just kind of a shithole all the time. Yeah. For the most part, I like the look of Batman. It's obvious he can't move his head an inch in either direction.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the suit looks iconic. It looks great, but... only when it's shot certain ways.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're kind of like...
I think it's... strung by that. Like, they could have used shadows a lot better.
Right.
And they do in two particular sequences, I think, to great effect. The first would be the intro to Batman, mm-hmm. where he stops the... doesn't really stop the muggers.
Oh, yeah.
He just beats them up after the fact and then, like, leaves them. That family's still mugged. He doesn't give them their stuff back. He doesn't beat these guys' asses before they take these people's stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird. But anyway... he looks cool. Like, when you see him, you don't see him very well. You don't see a lot of him.
Yeah.
The way it's shot, you never really get, like, a great shot. A little bit more the same in the chemical factory.
Oh, that seems great.
But it's very good. Shot. Yeah, and I think probably best of all is the whole sequence in the staircase climb and the bell tower fight at the end.
Yeah.
He's very rarely lit fully, and he looks like a moving shadow in a lot of those shots, and it's really effective.
Speaking of, what's up with that cathedral? That thing is, like, huge.
It's Tim Burton architecture, man. That is
the size of the Eiffel Tower.
So in a city full of skyscrapers that's, you know, based off of Chicago or New York or whatever, you know, it's clearly meant to be a city of that nature.
Yeah.
Every time you see it, there's buildings that are 40 stories tall, if not taller.
Yeah.
And yet the tallest building in the entire city is an old... church bell tower, and it like it's bell tower, sense. But like the church itself doesn't look that massive, and then it just happens to have like this 70 story bell tower. I
wonder what Sunday mass is like in that place. Like,
I just feel bad for the poor bastard that has to ring that bell because it doesn't appear to be automated.
Is there an elevator on the side?
No, it's stairs, bro. On the plus side, his calves are.
There's
probably
just some
ridiculous,
poor guy that lives at the top.
Yeah, he's like that guy in in Waterworld that lives like in the oil.
Yeah.
And when they drop the match like in there, when they drop the match in there, he's gonna die. He literally says, "Oh, thank God!" Like that's the dude who works in the bell tower in Gotham City.
Yeah, I want to know his story. We should do a spin-off
movie. No, I don't. I don't really want to see. It's probably really depressing and not that long. All right, so I dig. On one hand, I dig the Batmobile because it was the first time you'd ever seen something like that car on film. Everybody has their favorite, but this is probably my favorite of the four, we'll call them original films, the pre-Nolan films.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I like about Tim Burton's Batmobile is that it looks like a stealth vehicle that's really fast. It seems practical for what Batman would need.
Yeah.
You know? it's not super flashy like the Schumacher movies, which not doesn't make any sense. Like we'll get to that. We'll
it's like
get
a
to
rave
that.
On wheels.
But it does look like something like H.G. Geiger barfed up.
It looks like a baby's bottle wrapped in a jet engine spray-painted black. It kind of looks like some really emo kid with an imagination made that.
Yeah.
But it works. It totally works.
It's very Tim Burton, but you know, this whole movie is very Tim Burton.
That's the thing. Like you have to, if you're a fan of the books, like if you go to this movie, especially now where a lot of people haven't really grown up with it, it's looked at as like way too old or what have you. If you go into this movie looking for the comic book version of Batman, you might be disappointed. But if you go into it looking for like a very atmospheric, Tim Burton-y take on Batman, I think it works surprisingly well.
And that Tim Burton-y take, I mean, also includes, of course, Danny Elfman's score, which is awesome.
Which is really good.
And
yeah.
I think the movie really works because of that.
I think it definitely, I mean, the score, any good movie's gotta have a good score. If it has a terrible score, it's gonna destroy it.
Now, I love Hans Zimmer's music in the Nolan trilogy, but nothing.
I don't think those would work for these movies.
Yeah, and it's not as iconic. I mean, you can.
I gotta say one last thing about. There's two more things I don't like about this movie. And one of which is the Joker's, like, a weird preoccupation with playing Prince while he's killing people.
I mean, and there's obvious reasons behind that from a movie
corporate
standpoint.
Right, because they were trying to sell a soundtrack.
Choice,
but
as a character choice.
Like,
like this mobster's really into Prince.
Right, like, I could maybe see, like, not to keep going back to it, but like the comic book version, I could maybe see that. Like he's put on Prince, but he'd be playing that while he's like stabbing people or something, like really horrible.
Yeah.
And in the movie, he does it while he defaces art at a museum.
I kind of like that segment, but I the complaints about it.
Okay, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I like that he gasses everybody there.
Right.
Eats dinner at a museum? An art museum? Or like what kind of restaurant has super rare valuable art on the wall? I don't understand where they are. I understand him gassing everybody to go talk to somebody because that sounds like something the Joker would do.
Oh,
he's going to kill everyone in the mall to go yell at Timmy because Timmy, whatever. It just seems very Jokery.
Yeah,
but then he comes in with the boombox playing Prince with Bob the henchman, and these guys.
I have that action figure.
I do too. I have two of them. One of them is very chewed up by a dog, but he.
Bob.
I don't know. It was just such an odd choice. It's not necessarily like terrible. Yeah. It's just odd. It's very off putting. But then even worse to me, when he's driving down or going with his parade. Of the creepiest goddamn floats I have, the most Tim Burton floats I've ever seen, and he's playing Prince again, and it's like, what is this dude? I don't get like where the Prince thing comes from, besides from a corporate point of view.
It's almost his MO in the movie. It's like his theme. As
it's not even, and then the songs don't even apply to what's happening. It's not like he's playing a song that reminds him of murder. Yeah. They're just like, these are the two big hits from this album. We need to play these in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, that's.
Man, I think.
All right, and then the last thing that drives me nuts is that Alfred may be a good butler in these movies, but he is the worst secret keeper of all goddamn time. Like, it's unbelievable. He just Master
Batman
Bruce is
immediately.
He's kind of sad.
To a reporter.
Yeah, Batman should have thrown them both over the cliff. Yeah. In his, super goddamn dangerous Batcave. I don't like at all that he allows Vicky Vale to come into the Batcave and be like, surprise, Bruce, it's your girlfriend that you're trying to duck.
Yeah, kind of a shitty move, Alfred.
Yeah, what is your fucking problem, you old bastard? Like, is he trying to get laid,
Yeah.
Like vicariously? Like, I don't know, man. But that's Tim Burton's Batman. Some things are really great. Some things maybe don't hold up as well. We didn't even talk about Michael Keaton, but I guess we can get into that in the next one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is, of course,
Batman Returns. Batman.
I've been down here too long. It's time for me to ascend.
From the sewers of Gotham, a new villain emerges. From the rooftops of Gotham, the perfect enemy.
I am Catwoman. Hear me roar.
And the only one who can save this city is a creature of the night.
Continuing with 1992's Batman Returns, Tim Burton came back to direct this one. This one's starring Michael Keaton again as Batman, Bruce Wayne. Danny DeVito as the Penguin, Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman, and for some reason Christopher Walken's in this movie.
Oswald Cobblepot, the Twisted Penguin, coerces Gotham businessman and all-around scumbag Max Schreck to help him become the new mayor of Gotham. Schreck's murdered secretary, Selina Kyle, is somehow brought back to life by cats as the Catwoman. Batman must stop the freaky-ass penguin's plans and decide what the hell he's going to do with this super hot zombie-ish cat lady. Alright, so you got this success movie, of Batman, this right? Movie. Like, that movie was a juggernaut. The 1989 Batman.
Yeah.
So you got, coming off the success of that, you got people freaking out about this thing. The second they announced it, just I think it was announced as just Batman 2, people were, who's going to be in it? What's it going to be about? Who, you know, who's going to play the bad guys? Is Robin going to show up? Is Superman going to be in it? What's happening? And, you know, as you famously pointed out one time, this thing had freaking Happy Meals
made about it. Yeah.
And they trotted out the weirdest shit, the most Tim Burton-y thing that you'll ever see.
The movie starts with this really disturbing sequence with Oswald Cobblepot's parents, and they lock him in a cage and throw him over a bridge into the sewage system.
Did they put him in a cage? I think he's just in a...
I
think he's just in, like, a baby carriage. I think he's just, like, he's in a cage. Because he's in, like, a cage on the floor and he eats the fucking cat.
At one point, yeah.
Yeah, a little baby.
That's
with
how they start this movie.
A baby.
Yeah.
Grabs and eats. Apparently, being born with webbed hands makes you super strong and feral from birth.
Yeah.
Those Cobblepots are messed up, man. Like, he...
But the thing about this... I mean, this is...
See, that's the thing, though. Like, the whole act of the parents disposing of the child is in itself monstrous.
It's pretty disturbing.
Right. Yeah. It's, this rich family wheels their kid out in a little, you know, like a stroller. And they wait till no one's looking, and they get on a bridge, and they throw this thing into the icy river, and it goes down into the sewer. We'll get to that. But the act of doing that in itself should be like a monstrous thing. But when right before that you see that this baby is a monster, it kind of takes away. It's just more like, oh, wow, this is so super Tim Burton. It's just things getting darker and weirder and darker and weirder. Yeah. And then as it goes down into the sewer, he's discovered by, of all things,
penguins.
Fucking penguins. Apparently the sewers in Gotham are just exactly as hospitable to penguins as the South Pole. It's mind-boggling. And I guess he's raised by a mixture of penguins and...
Yeah, which is weird, because the last time I checked, the penguin in the comics wasn't raised by penguins.
No, it's a derogatory nickname.
Or in the sewers.
Because he's a little fat guy that waddles. That's all it is. And I mean, he hates it. It's like a thing. He's just a little mob boss. He's just some little, he's like Tony Soprano, but shorter. And people that call him the penguin behind his back. And that's kind of the joke.
Yeah.
And instead we get this guy who looks like a fucking, like an albino ghoul.
It's like, yeah.
He wears this disgusting, I'm convinced it's from Danny DeVito's personal outfit. This stained, nasty onesie. It's like pajamas. Yeah. No, it's not latex. It's like pajamas. And he wears like this dusty old overcoat with it, and he just walks around with like this net, like his gums are all black for some reason. I don't know, whatever. Apparently, being born the way he was born gives him like giant rings of guyliner, and he just it's so unsettling.
It's like they spliced the Penguin with Killer Croc and a mutant hobo,
and like an something found on the underside of a rock in a cave. And then his plot is utter nonsense. I mean, it is utter nonsense. Yep. So he blackmails. It doesn't take much coercing. He's like all in right away. But he blackmails Christopher Walken's character to try to help him get elected as mayor of Gotham City. And he does this by staging these kidnappings using his army of homeless clown circus folk, which... Wrong yeah. fucking movie. They should have been for working for the Joker, yeah, but yeah, okay, right, whatever. Yeah. He had Bob. So anyway, like, the Penguin uses these guys to stage these kidnappings, and then he comes off as the hero. So it's actually working, which, look, I get, like, some people in Gotham being like, wow, this guy's different than these normal politicians, but, like, vote for a black guy. Like, this is crazy. You're going so far the other direction. And then, like, there's a scene where he's at a,
oh, my God.
Is it a fundraiser or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Anyway, he's coming down some stairs.
Headquarters.
That's what it is.
He's in front of a ton of people, by the way.
Press being there, too. Press!
And he's in his onesie.
His disgusting, raw fish drool-stained onesie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got to smell like just the worst kind of butt.
Like, that alone should have cost him the election.
Bro,
like... But then he bites a guy's nose off in front of everyone.
Yeah,
it's one of the goriest scenes.
Really
it's,
nuts.
Yeah,
like
yeah, it's blood squirting out and it's like dripping.
You
down
can hear like break the guy's nose with his teeth. It's really disturbing.
And people still vote for him after that?
Well, did they?
I mean,
like, I guess they did.
Like modern politics.
It's
like,
probably rigged as fuck. But especially in Gotham, which is supposed to be like the most crooked thing ever. Like your work is really paying off, Batman.
Yeah.
But
it's like, what was the final straw?
Yeah, there's even that scene where like Batman plays DJ with the recording.
Yeah.
Like he gets a recording of the Penguin basically saying like "fuck everybody in Gotham, I need what I need, and the rest of you guys are scum." Yeah. And he starts piping it through the speakers at the Penguin's press conference.
Yeah.
And he plays it, and everyone's looking around like, "Wow, I can't believe you said that. This is crazy." And then Batman starts scratching the record.
Yeah.
So he's like, "Screw them all! Screw them all!" And it's so bizarre. Like the entire movie. Is, I don't know, maybe an hour and 45 minutes or so, but it's like an hour and 45 minutes of baffling decisions. I mean, it's, he once again, like, reveals his identity for no reason whatsoever. Catwoman is easily the best part of the movie, but she's not in it nearly enough. And when her and Christopher Walken's character, Max Schreck, when their story dovetails at the end, it feels so...
anticlimactic?
Because you just saw the most absurd sequence of events you've ever seen. You just saw an army of sewer-dwelling Gotham penguins with backpacks on, which right away, so many problems with that
sentence.
They
had rocket packs or something. They had like missiles.
They have missiles! Rockets
so
on
weird.
Their backs! This and they're marching down the street.
This was a big blockbuster.
This
movie.
Was a tentpole
summer franchise
film that, once again, I'll remind people listening, had fucking Happy Meals.
Yeah.
The onesie fish man biting off the other dude's face. Hey, kids! Come get a fish fillet. You get a free penguin toy with it. Anyway, the movie made a decent amount of money. It definitely didn't outperform its predecessor.
Right.
It definitely didn't outperform the previous movie.
Yeah.
But it definitely did not live up to maybe the hype. But it certainly didn't live up to the expectations of Warner Brothers. And they made some changes very shortly thereafter. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about Batman Returns? I mean, there's so many things to just nitpick to hell about this movie. I mean, honestly, just Google Danny DeVito Penguin. There's a shot in this movie where he's posing for the press in his disgusting, gray, stained, nasty man onesie. And he's got blood running down his chin. And he's smiling like, jeez, vote for me. It's insane. It's
pretty insane. Crazy. Pretty crazy. Can we talk about Commissioner Gordon?
Real quick. Oh, yes, please.
Oh, my God. So he was pretty ineffectual in the first movie, right?
He's very briefly in it, and he doesn't really have any impact on the film.
Like, but he seemed like a commissioner in the first movie, at least. Like, he yeah, didn't do much. Yeah. In this movie, he does even less.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a couple scenes, and they're both like, hey, Batman, we could use your help a little here, you know.
Yeah, the one scene where he doesn't even interact with them at the beginning, does he? It's just Batman's has this weird mirror system set up in his house to notify.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's actually kind of smart.
Yeah.
But when the bat symbol goes off, so he's not sitting by like one window in his house all day.
Just sitting there brooding in the dark.
Which is exactly what he's doing when you find him.
Yeah.
But he has this complicated series of mirrors that I guess are triggered by the light going off.
Yeah.
And it reflects back down to him in the cave to show him that the signal is going on. Now, why he wouldn't just have like some kind of like sensor set up at the rooftop. Or like a red phone under a glass case.
Yeah, right? Like, that would have been
nice. Hey, Batman, we need your help down at the Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
He's utterly ineffectual. And
cops in Gotham just suck.
Yeah, like, which is really weird because
like, they don't even show up when all those guys are attacking. Like, Batman's the only one that takes care of them.
And by takes care of, he means murders brutally.
He does. Yeah.
Especially with
fire. He's
more
of a serial killer in this one than he was in the last one.
He, again, kills more people than anybody else in the movie.
Which, I mean, it's obviously not the comic version of Batman, but I kind of like it. There's something...
I joke about it because it's funny to me. But it's not something where I'm not fanboying out over this. Like, there's different versions of this character. And like, I mean, even if people who were just slaves to just the comic book version, there's dozens and dozens, if not more, iterations of this character, different interpretations of this character in his world. And that's why this character has been as successful and as long-lived as he's been, is because he's flexible. His world is flexible.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can have somebody who looks at it one way and somebody looks at it another. You can have those stories existing back to back from one year to the next in the same title. Like, you can be reading just Detective Comics and one guy's writing a book and he looks at Clayface one way, and then another guy comes on and he looks at him another way and completely changes the way the characters looked at. Like, that's just the name of the game with these characters. So, you know, it doesn't bother me that he's murdering more people than Schwarzenegger and Commando so much, because that's just the version that Tim Burton put on film.
And I kind of like Michael Keaton's like psychotic version of Bruce Wayne.
Oh man, we've underplayed him so hard that he's really good. I don't love him as Batman, but he is so good as Bruce Wayne because it's this weird choice of the character because generally the Bruce Wayne is the facade. He's like a hollow nothing. Like, he's a vapid, stereotypical, you know, rich kid.
Yeah.
But and he puts on the air that like he's just an idiot. He's just out there to spend his parents' money, and he has smart people that run his company, and that's why he's still rich. But Keaton plays him as like this kind of sarcastic, witty lunatic. Like, he is a hair trigger to the point where, like, if I knew this guy, I wouldn't ever think he's the Batman.
Yeah.
But I would definitely think he has bodies in his basement.
Yeah, and Michelle Pfeiffer's great as Catwoman, like we said before.
Oh, can we talk very briefly about how she becomes Catwoman?
Yeah, it's weird.
Because she literally has 9 lives.
Yeah.
And this happens because her boss throws her out of, again, some impossibly tall building.
Yeah.
And she hits the ground, of course, and dies. And almost immediately, an army of stray cats, and I mean, there's like 20 of these goddamn things, start running around and like, hitting her. They're just like running into her and running over her, and one starts chewing on her fingers and they're like licking her, but most of them are just like bumping into her. And I don't mean that way that cats like rub on you.
Yeah.
It's more like they're running into her. So it's kind of, it's an odd looking scene. It's not something you normally see from those animals.
It's not really explained. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Zero lead in, zero explanation.
Gets cat powers,
cats bite her and she comes back to life, and that's literally why she becomes Catwoman.
Yeah.
And then you see like she feeds some stray cats at her apartment.
Yeah.
So like, look, oh, she's always loved cats. It's just weird. And there is I will say this, there is a nice visual foreshadowing where you see her in her like cat's eye glasses. She has you know, like reading glasses.
Yeah.
And the light hits them a certain way, and it outlines her face exactly the way her mask eventually does.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice little tip of the hat. I thought that was cool. Yeah. I think her costume looks kind of sweet. It's homemade, and you actually see her making it.
I think it looks awesome. I mean,
yeah, it looks cool. It's very 90s Catwoman. Or no, I'm sorry. It's very Tim Burton. Yeah. It's like, you know, latex and black leather and stuff. And that's fine. I mean, it does what it needs to do. She kind of channels
the Halle Berry version.
Oh, Jesus. That doesn't exist. She kind of channels like the Julie Newmar version of the character. She gets like a little like perfect kind of thing.
Yeah.
But obviously hypersexualized and pretty violent.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, her storyline is just for a character that cool, like to give her fans that story is, I think, a disservice. Now the portrayal of the character and the look, I think they nailed. But,
yeah,
like, totally. The way, like, just what happens with her, I think, is kind of ridiculous.
Right, yeah, totally. And they made a point to, like, have her, like, alive at the end of the movie, and then they never used her again, which was kind of...
Right, but I think that has more to do with the fact that they were changing directors. They'll be changing directors in maybe the worst franchise baton handoff since, Jesus, I don't know, since the reigns of Superman were yanked out of Richard Donner's hands and... slapped into Richard Lester's grubby meat paws.
Yeah.
Anyway, bizarre. So we'll get to that. But this was the last time that we'll see Tim Burton and Michael Keaton or Catwoman. Oddly enough, Alfred and the inept, almost non-existent Commissioner Gordon will carry over. But that's pretty much it. No more. Another guy we totally forgot to mention.
Yeah.
Lando Calrissian himself, Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, my God.
Was in the first movie as Harvey Dent, who, of course, fans of the Batman know. Would later go on to become Two-Face.
We'll get into that.
We will never see Billy Dee Williams again in the Batman films. Sorry, Billy Dee. In that, you know, he's done after Batman Returns. Michael Keaton, sadly, is done after Batman Returns. Thank God the Penguin does not make it out of this movie. Max Schreck, thankfully, does not make it out of this movie.
Yeah.
The Clown Army and the Penguin Army are still at large.
All right, so next up we're talking about Batman Forever, 1995, directed by Joel Schumacher. Starring Val Kilmer this time as Batman instead of Michael Keaton. It's got Chris O'Donnell as Robin, Jim Carrey as the Riddler, Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face, Nicole Kidman as Dr. Chase Meridian, and, you know, Alfred's back in it.
Yeah, for all the good he does.
We have a new Batmobile this time around. As for the plot, Batman and his new sidekick, Robin, have to combine forces to take on Two-Face, former district attorney Harvey Dent, who blames Batman for the courtroom incident that scarred his face. And Riddler, Edward Nygma, a former employee of Bruce Wayne, seeking revenge for being justifiably fired.
Mm-hmm.
And their device that is going to steal all of the information from all the brains in Gotham, or some stupid crap like that.
Yeah, man, this movie. Where to start on this one? I guess the first thing you'll notice and the first thing we'll talk about is that the look of the film is very different than what's come before. Obviously, I would assume that that's a byproduct of the change in director. Gotham has gone from that kind of like neo-gothic kind of facade that we liked so much in the first two films, and it's become this bizarre day glow neon fucking like 900 foot statues everywhere, spotlights everywhere all the time spotlights.
It's like Batman moved to a different city.
It literally looks like Gotham collided with like Blade Runner in an anime. It's a completely different city than the last two films, and I think that would be a little bit more acceptable had this just been like its own universe.
Like a straight reboot.
Yeah, and
but instead, for all intents
and for all intents and purposes, it should be. But like you know, they keep Alfred, which for one would be hard for average people to be like, so wait, that dude's the same, you know?
Yeah.
And then they have a reference to his parents being murdered by who ends up becoming the Joker.
Yeah.
In the first movie, so it's very like they're going out of their way to be like, no, this is part three.
Yeah.
But everything else about it is so different that it's a huge disconnect.
It's a very different tone.
And part of that's got to be from Warner Brothers trying to, like, kid-friendly up the thing a little bit. But I think a lot of it has to do with the director change as well. And look, I've never been, and probably never will be, the biggest Tim Burton fan. There's some films of his I really like, and some I just think are insanely overrated and blah, 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 right? And I kind of feel the same way about Joel Schumacher in reverse. Like, I think he's made some really good movies, but he's made some truly awful movies too. And this is certainly not the worst offender. And there are people that have made way worse movies than this one. But it's, as far as like a big budget, big studio, major summer release. Did they come out in the summer?
I think so, yeah.
But major release, we'll say, like a tentpole release. And it's hard to say that he did a bad job because the movie made a ridiculous amount of money.
Yep.
It actually was far more profitable than Batman Returns was.
Yep.
I think probably the average filmgoer kind of was like, this one maybe didn't do it for me, but my kids really liked it.
Yeah, and see, I gotta admit, like, I saw this as a kid, so I kind of enjoyed it for what it was, but even at the time, I was like, well, it's not as good as the animated series, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, none of the movies are, let's be honest. The animated series is fantastic. It's an Emmy Award-winning show, like, it's fantastic, and it's for nerds like us that are, their primary source of Batman is the comic books, and that's, like, we all know, like, that's the real shit. Like, that's where you want your best Batman moments. 9 times out of 10, it's out of a comic book.
Exactly, yeah.
Or it's something adapted from a comic book, you know, like all the cool stuff in the animated series and the movies. The majority of the stuff that people remember is usually lifted from the book.
Speaking of the animated series, Two-Face in that show was fantastic. He was probably one of the best versions of that character. And then we got this version, which is...
You're a gambling man. One man is born a hero, his brother a coward. Babies starve, politicians grow fat. Holy men are martyred, and junkies grow legion. Why?
Luck! Blind, stupid, simple, doodah, clueless luck! The random toss.
You really waste Tommy Lee Jones when you have him doing it, like, you know, hamming it up like this.
Which is unfortunate because he's a good actor and it's a fantastic character that's obviously been done better in other mediums.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
But it's Tommy Lee Jones doing a Jack Nicholson impression.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually. And it's really unfortunate because if you had given Tommy Lee Jones, like, excuse me, the Harvey Dent that, say, Aaron Eckhart was able to portray in The Dark Knight, you get the feeling that Tommy Lee Jones would have really been able to kind of sink his teeth into something like that.
He could have killed it.
At the very least, he would have engaged with something like that. You can tell in this one, he's just like, oh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And it's, you mentioned something to me that the biggest problem the movie has villain-wise is that it's got two villains that are both manic. And the problem with that, besides the fact that it just doesn't work, is that you've got an actor playing a character that neither one of whom are supposed to be manic.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have one of them doing that up against the most manic actor of all time, it's really bizarre. And it's really unfortunate because Two-Face is one of the, you know, most Batman fans would say top two or three villains that Batman has. Like,
oh, yeah, easily.
He's definitely way up there.
Yeah.
And yet, it took, God, you know, how many movies? 5 movies before he was even given some shake of a dude, you know? Like, they really, really dropped the ball on this. I don't like his look. I think he looks fucking ridiculous. Like, he's got half of a power suit and half of, like, a thrift store, like, fuck the couch from the 70s or something.
Like, I can't imagine Two-Face walking into a tailor and then ordering this.
Yeah.
Like, how did he get this thing made?
Did he seriously, like, use scissors and, like, cut every one of these suits in half and, like, sew them together? Like, so he's got, like, a reverse of each one? Like, oh, now I got two. Like, that's totally ridiculous.
It is.
You know, and
even
no one's
for a comic book movie.
It's just absurd, man. Like, why doesn't he just have a suit and half it's jacked up?
Yeah.
Like, burn with acid still or something. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's a million ways it could have been cooler, but I guess this is made more to, like, sell toys.
Sure.
You know, and it's just unfortunate that this very tragic character is basically related to, like, second string weirdo California raisin reject. His look is, like I said, it's ridiculous, but it's not just his clothes.
His face.
Yeah. It's
his freaking face.
It's really bad.
And
it's
why is his hair purple?
Yeah. Here's the thing. The makeup job itself, like the actual burn look is pretty decent. Like, it's not that bad.
No.
But how acid would turn your skin purple.
Like, bright purple.
Like, bright. Like, everything else fucking neon was purple.
Yeah.
I guess the hair is like he dyed it to go with the skin, but that makes it even less goddamn sense. Like, it's just, I'm telling you guys, if you've never seen it, it's not a good look. It's really ridiculous, and it completely undercuts the villain in just one way, in which they do a number of ways. And you speak of villains, you can't help but think about in this movie, it's not Two-Face, you remember, it's Jim Carrey's the Riddler. It's fucking ridiculous Riddler.
Riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the big black bat?
You've always been a fan of the Riddler. Like, you dig the Riddler.
Yeah,
What's your take on this version?
I mean, he's obviously channeling the 60s Gorshin version.
Yeah.
But I tend to prefer, like, a more calm, calculated Riddler. Like, the mastermind that's, like, three steps ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
I don't get that from Jim Carrey.
No, man. He plays it like almost like it's a skit, but like a mad TV skit. Like, you could tell he's just dicking around. And I mean, to be fair, you walk into like the sets he's walking on. They're all lit with like the green and purple. Everything's green, fucking purple and blue. And everything seems to have like searchlights and zoom around outside and stuff. It just looks ridiculous. And the props are really cheesy. Like, his whole plan is to use this device he's built to access these other devices he's built that he's sold people.
Yeah.
That they'll attach to their televisions. And when he activates all these things, it'll use the signal from their television to steal information from their brains and beam it up to him. Which is... it's utter nonsense, all right? Everybody can... that's ridiculous. Those things I just said do not belong together. But the thing that he puts on looks like something out of, like, an old Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
It's so cheesy looking.
Cheesy sci-fi, you know, at its best. Or at its worst, really.
I would say worst, yeah.
It looks like Tesla coils around a blender. Like, it's...
I'm telling you.
Ridiculous.
His plan, as I described it, is nonsense.
Well, and I got a question for you. If he had to, like, get this PR department together to, like, promote these things and actually sell them... why didn't he just stop there? Like,
he
already made a ton of money.
He's so stupid.
But he had to go the next step and, like, you know.
But see, I don't understand how using...
like, if you're going to be a super criminal, just, you know, do some money laundering.
But isn't his whole thing, like, he only cares... the score is important, I guess. Like, the money's important. But the real thing for him is stumping everybody. Like, they can't figure out his riddle.
Yeah.
Or really, once he kind of gets to spar with him a few times, it's kind of beating the Batman.
Yeah.
But early Riddler, it would be about, like, kind of getting away with the...
right.
I gave you a clue, and I still got away with it, you know? And instead with this dude, it's like...
yeah.
They're all just, like, gags. And
yeah.
It's so... I honestly, for the life of me, there's only one riddle I can actually remember in the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's really more of a scene, and it's just because it's so... so stupid and so painful. And it's there's a scene where Bruce Wayne and Alfred have gathered together all the clues that the Riddler has left behind to this point.
Yeah.
And they figured out that, like, it's his first message has been completed.
Mm-hmm.
And the logic they use
it's so absurd.
Is so it's so stupid and so lazily written.
Yeah.
It's like they were like, well, we have to have a riddle in here somewhere. And they're like, oh man, we got to come up with a riddle.
Yeah.
Ugh. And they gave us this dog shit.
What is that? Where's that coming from? There!
Who the hell's doing that?
The Riddler.
We're five little items of an everyday sort. You'll find us all in a tennis court. In. A-E-I-O-U. Vowels.
Not entirely unclever, sir, but what do a clock, a match, chess pawns and vowels have in common? What do these riddles mean?
Every riddle has a number in the question, and they arrived in this order. 13, 1, 8, and 5.
13, 1, 8, and 5. What do they mean?
Perhaps letters of the alphabet?
Of course, 13 is M.
One would be A, 8 would be H, and 5 would be E. M-A-H-E.
Perhaps 1 and 8 are 18.
18 is R-M-R-E. How about Mr. E?
Mystery.
And another name for mystery?
Enigma.
Mr. Enigma. Edward Nigma. Stickley's suicide was obviously a computer-generated forgery.
You really are quite bright, despite what people say.
So the Riddler is always, like, he's so ridiculous and so over the top that he robs the movie of any kind of dramatic tension.
Yeah, yeah. There's that raid on Wayne Manor where Two-Face shows up, captures Chase Meridian, and has a gun pointed to Bruce Wayne's face at one point. That moment's completely ruined by what happens next with the Riddler blowing up the Batcave.
It's the only legitimately threatening moment in the entire film where you feel like there's some actual peril involved here. Now, you don't expect Batman to get shot in the face at home. I mean, shit, if they did that, like,
this movie all of a sudden dark.
This movie has some serious balls. But, no, it is a pretty cool scene. And then all of a sudden it cuts down to Jim Carrey in his skin-tight onesie, you know, dicking around and throwing toys into cars and blowing them up and saying things like joygasm. And
yeah, he's making more jokes than the Joker.
He's so Jim Carrey that it's crazy. And I like Jim Carrey, but he's so Jim Carrey that it's distracting. I mean, it really detracts from the rest of the movie, honestly. And it's not a good movie even without him. Don't get me wrong. It's not like if you tone him way down, all of a sudden it's awesome. But I think it would solve some of the problems from a dramatic standpoint. You know, like, for instance, the whole thing where, and I can't remember for the life of me if this was like from an old Jason Todd story, but there was at one point, and it was adapted into a really excellent animated episode, where there's this through line where Two-Face is either directly or indirectly responsible for the death of the Flying Graysons at Haley Circus. Now, there's a great opportunity for them to introduce the circus and introduce Dick Grayson and everything as a young kid, you know, or even if you don't want to do young kid, maybe he's 15, right? Sure. 16 even, like, but he's still a kid. Like, he's still not 18, or as Chris O'Donnell is, you know, probably 23 going on 40. So anyway, they have a really, you know, they do end up using that connection with Two-Face, but very, very thinly. Yeah. It's just a reason for Robin to go like, but I want to punch him. Yeah. And it's really just not done well, but that thread is introduced. So, you know, that they're aware that that connection could be made.
Yeah.
And it, you know, maybe if the Riddler's not zapping around the screen all the time, jumping in people's faces and stuff, maybe you could get a scene or two of something to focus like that. And maybe that helps with otherwise, to be honest, in my opinion, a really kind of pointless and boring Robin, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. The suit's even not that bad. I mean, it's got some weird choices on it, but, you know, it looks like a modified bat suit. It kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's not the greatest thing ever, but look, I mean, you think about the costumes Robin had had up to that point, like, they definitely went the right direction where they kind of went more with the Tim Drake, the 90s Robin look. But it does, I do kind of like the idea that it looks like Bruce took one of his costumes, or Robin took one of Bruce's costumes, and kind of painted it up.
Yeah.
Red and green. And I like the fact that they used the Tim Drake, Neil Adams design cape, the black outside cape with the yellow
trim on the inside. That looks good, actually.
Yeah. It looks really cool.
The collar's a little weird.
But that's a throwback to the Dick Grayson thing. The thing is, like, the rest of the costume doesn't really match that.
Yeah.
It's an odd look.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, it would have worked better if they went full Tim Drake. They went with the idea to make Robin, like, essentially a college kid.
Yeah.
Living at Bruce Wayne's house doing karate laundry and going like, I can do whatever I want. And he's just obnoxious brat. Like,
yeah, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
Instead of having like real emotional depth and having suffered a tragedy that like you can see he and Bruce could bond over, it's just like this inconvenience. And he discovers Batman's Bruce Wayne and he's like, well, you know, I want to fight too, so I'm going to use your gear and go fight Two-Face because someone has to fight the second villain. Yeah.
And exactly.
It's unfortunate, man, because Robin's a really great character. I don't care which one you're talking about. I freaking love Robin. I have since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I don't prefer him to Batman because I'm not crazy. But Robin's a cool character, and it's look, it's not like they Halle Berry Catwoman him or something like that. Like, O'Donnell tries with what he's got. It's kind of like just one of those things where it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Batman's saying, like, chicks dig the car. Or the Batmobile is, like, all of a sudden, like, this fucking club car.
Oh, my God.
Neon and bat symbols on the wheels. And
it makes zero sense. It's supposed to be a stealth vehicle, but it's like a glow-in-the-dark toy.
Yeah, well, that's probably exactly why it looks like that. There, in one scene, it literally, I mean, it basically jumps over a shark. It literally drives straight up a building. And you would think, like, when you're watching it, like, well, that's the most ridiculous thing I'll ever see in this movie. But hold your horses, my friend. Somehow, someway, Bruce Wayne has found a way to build a tunnel that connects his chair in his office, which I wouldn't move ever because, you know, whatever. His chair like slides so that it, all of a sudden it's like a flat surface. And he zooms down this tunnel underneath his desk that zooms
from the top of Wayne Tower
right
to his Batcave below Wayne Manor,
which is
I don't know how many miles away.
Miles away.
Yeah.
So,
like, Wayne Manor's clearly outside of the city limits.
Yes.
Like in the middle of nowhere.
So I have a couple questions about this too. It can't go down the outside of the building because everybody would see it.
Yeah.
But if it goes down the middle of the building,
yeah.
Every single person who operates in any capacity up against that column would absolutely know when it was in use. Like, you could not hide. Anyway. Whatever.
And also, if it's a straight drop, he would die.
He would absolutely die.
And then how does he, like, go,
does it go horizontally, like, two floors and then, like, take, like, some wacky-ass turn? And, like, go down around the outside, like, every two floors, it turns left.
And the contractor building that thing would have questions.
Who in the hell is the architect that built this thing?
Yeah.
And, anyway, it makes no sense.
Do you think it's, like, one of those suction tubes at the bank?
That is actually really funny, and I hope it is. The pneumatic tubes. There it goes. We'll see you in about 10 minutes. I think the idea was that because he even, if I remember correctly, he comes out the other end of the tube into the cave in costume.
He does. I think so. I'm pretty sure he does.
If I'm wrong, you know, I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
Be honest. This if it's movie. Been a while since you saw it, you believe
it would surprise
was.
Me. Yeah.
You totally believed he was.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But I think that comes from the TV show where they would slide down the pole and come down in full.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a reference to that. Yeah.
So we mentioned him very briefly, but let's talk about the real big news of this movie was that there was a new Batman.
Yeah.
After two films with the change in directors, there was a change in leading men. They went from the quiet insanity of Michael Keaton to the quaalude, barely awake, stoned out of his face, Val Kilmer, who looks like a disinterested Batman, but a, like, barely given a shit Bruce Wayne. Like,
he's so detached.
So Keaton had, like, a little bit of, like, sly charm to him, even when he was, like, kind of playing the dumb idiot.
Yeah.
You know, Kilmer is just, like, this dude...
Straight sociopath.
Yeah, but, like, all right, so you know, Alfred, tonight I'm going to have to go and beat up these two weirdos, and tomorrow I'm going to finish my woman suit made out of the scalps and skins of the women I've killed. You know, like, he's just he is so stoic that it looks like he's barely awake.
Well, and he's no different when he's in or out of the bat suit.
No,
like, he's
exactly
the same
Batman,
person. Yeah.
Except when he's Batman, he has the confidence to say things like, chicks dig the car. There's one kind of saving grace in the movie that I do like, and it's so, like, you have to have your nerd card bright and polished to find this as a saving grace. But there is an offhanded remark in the movie where he mentions Metropolis. And for people like me who have grown up, like, kind of obsessing over these movies and shit, for them to mention one of the other ones was really big. Now, people would take something like that for granted today because we've got, like, the Marvel Universe where everything's tied into everything. And,
yeah,
you know, and it's fantastic. But back then, we didn't have anything like that. So for them to even mention Metropolis meant that Superman existed in that universe.
Yeah, it was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, nothing ever came of it, but but it was just cool to be like, oh, wow, that's kind of neat. And you kind of spend the next 2 or 3 minutes imagining a much better movie than the one you were watching, unfortunately. And like the movie's weird, off-putting title implies, this piece of shit's going to be around forever. So in this episode of Alfred Pennyworth, Worst Butler Ever, it's Halloween, and he's allowing people to walk straight up to the fucking door of Wayne Manor, which on a normal day, bad idea, right? Like, you're trying to protect Batman's secret? Don't allow strangers on the property. But on Halloween, you've got people just patrolling up and down, and this dumb motherfucker falls for Two-Face and the Riddler as children, man. Like, they're wearing these little shitty, like, masquerade masks, and he's like, oh, look, kids! And then, of course, this leads to the raid on Wayne Manor, the kidnapping of Dr. Meridian and everything, and Bruce almost getting shot in the face. Ladies and gentlemen, I give to you Alfred Pennyworth, Worst Butler Alive.
Suit me up, Uncle Alfred.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. If that weren't enough, you're going to make me talk about 1997's Batman and Robin, aren't you? This piece of dog shit, which I put very strongly in quotation marks as a movie, was directed by Joel Schumacher. And I say starring with the most sarcasm a human can possibly utter from their body. George Clooney as Batman. Chris O'Donnell returns as Robin. We are introduced to Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl. Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. Arnold Schwarzenegger himself as Mr. Freeze.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
Some guy you never heard of named Jeep Swenson playing what we will be super kind and call Bane, although calling that Bane is like an insult to everything that's good in this world.
His name is Bane.
We also have Elle McPherson, the model, playing Julie Madison, and really for zero reason whatsoever other than to get another really beautiful person on screen. And then, of course, we've got Michael Goff? I don't fucking know. We've got Alfred returning once again as the worst butler of all time. Only this time, a lot of the plot's going to revolve around him. How exciting! Really, the plot, you know what? The plot of this movie is fuck you. That's the plot. This is one of the worst, most poorly fucking conceived, awful, insulting, shittiest pieces of shit I have ever seen. And I've seen Bebe's Kids. This is a terrible fucking movie. I mean, it's poorly made, it's poorly directed, it's insanely poorly written. You can tell nobody even gives a shit about it. It's so fucking bad that every single person involved in the making of it, including Schumacher, has talked about how they hope they're not counted on like the worst movies of all time list. George Clooney freely admits that this movie killed the franchise. It is unbearable. It's got a terrific cast, and it should have been awesome. Instead, it's easily the death knell in not only the Batman franchise at that point, but really in superhero movies in general for a while. I know it came out in 1997, and it seems like, dude, come on, Blade came out like 2 years later. That's not... But if you don't understand, like, when this came out, it felt like game over, man. Like, we had Superman 4, and we thought we dodged a bullet, and then this came out, and it was like... That's it.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any more Superman movies, and there damn sure ain't going to be any more Batman movies.
Yeah.
At that point, nobody thought there would ever be X-Men or Avengers or, you know, Iron Man or Captain America, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
We never thought we'd see a Fantastic Four movie.
Right. It's not just that it's a bad movie.
Oh, it sure is, though.
It's that what it implied for the, you know, the entire genre, you know? It was a train wreck on every level.
Here's the thing. This movie's been out for, what, 21 years now? And every time I talk about it, it makes me madder. And like, it's so...
His face is red right now. He's seething.
He's so fucking angry. It's so absurdly bad.
It's like, such an insult to Batman fans.
It's despite the fact that the next three films for Batman were, in my opinion, infinitely better than the stuff that had come prior for the most part. This is so fucking bad. Like, I mean, honestly, all I have to do, forget the nipple and crotch shots and the butt shots and all that. Forget the horrible idea of Alicia Silverstone being a British girl with no accent and being Alfred's niece, because, you know, nobody gives a fuck about Commissioner Gordon in these movies.
Yeah.
So her being his daughter would make zero impact. Oh, it's that fat dude who keeps going, look out, there's a new villain in town.
Yeah. Batman, a new villain has commandeered the Gotham Museum. He's frozen the antiquities wing. He's turned the security guards into blocks of ice. He's calling himself Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze.
From everything from the cheesy goofiness of Uma Thurman's performance, like she's fucking Julie Newmar or something playing on the old Batman TV show, to the silver costumes, the Batman credit card, all that shit. This movie's a pile of garbage, and everybody involved in it should be ashamed.
As they are.
A utility belt, not a money belt. $6 million.
$7 million. Never leave the cave without it.
All right, so every frame of this movie is bad, but there's two things that really bother me about it. First of all, Mr. Freeze is not necessarily a bad villain, you know? Like, there's good versions of him. Once again, the animated series.
Yeah, Freeze can be, for as ridiculous of a concept it is, he can be really cool.
Yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually a really good actor. Well, he's a good action star, at least.
He knows how to... Yeah, all right. He knows how to make words come out of his body.
He's been in some good movies.
He's a very good action star.
He's not exactly a good choice for Freeze, first of all, but the way he plays Freeze is one of the worst things ever.
It's so bad. And part of it's just all the god-awful, terrible one-liners.
Yeah, they're painful.
Killed the dinosaurs, the Ice Age, and all that. Just terrible nonsense. There's nobody alive that could have made that cool.
The Iceman cometh.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
It's ridiculous. I mean, the movie loses all credibility. It's just too aware of itself.
Fuck you.
It's worse than the 60s Adam West series.
But at least that was like...
Well, that embraced its campiness.
Comedy, man. I mean, look.
But this was a follow-up to three relatively serious movies.
Well, two. Well, one, because the Penguins.
Yeah.
One and the second one were really... Just...
I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy.
There's a lot.
When I say everything about this movie is bad, I mean everything. The production design is awful. The props and everything are terrible. The costumes are terrible. The shot composition is terrible. The dialogue, the makeup, everything about it, the plot, everything about it is fucking, it's just bad.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
there's really nothing else to say. The best example to me is the introduction to Batman and Robin in the cave. That whole scene is irritating, and everything about it just screams. In the very beginning of the movie, get the fuck out of the theater. Go. Now, leave.
Robin's bat cycle comes out of a neon coffin.
Yeah. and that's a good time to talk about the Batmobile, which is so hilariously ridiculous. Like, it's...
It took everything wrong with the previous Batmobile and, like, turned it up to 11.
And got rid of everything that worked about it. Like, the fact that kind of parts of it were still black. This thing looks like it's like he's driving a giant flashlight with, like, really big plastic wings on it. It's really absurd. And then Robin, like you mentioned, Robin has a motorcycle, which, okay. I guess Batman can't be bothered to put two seats in his fucking car. But...
Yeah.
He keeps a motorcycle in a neon coffin, and then you see what he does with it.
One of the most ridiculous scenes in the movie, which is really saying something, is when Robin busts in on the scene. On his motorcycle, he crashes through the museum, and it creates like a Robin signal.
His entrance through the wall of the building. The motorcycle smashed. Yeah. First of all, his motorcycle crashes through a wall of a museum. You gotta imagine that's a pretty thick wall.
Yeah.
Which means he had to be going really fast. Which means he should be dead.
Yeah.
He should be probably just splattered on the outside of the building. But presumably he like maybe hit it with some explosives or something.
Yeah.
Which means that he's so fucking egotistical that he created a weapon in the shape of his own little like, no, this is a Robin. First of all, no, it's not. It's nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And then he somehow, like, all right, here's the other thing. The symbol through the wall is retarded. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But if you took his bike and him and put it in reverse, I guarantee you it doesn't fit through that hole.
Yeah.
There's no way. Like,
nothing about that scene makes sense.
It's just... It encapsulates the movie. I would say it's form over function, but there's like no form to it. It's just a mess. Top to bottom, every scene is a fucking mess.
One final note I just want to point out. There's a bat credit card in this movie.
Yeah.
That means that Batman has a bank account. Not Bruce Wayne.
The expiration date on this card, which the logo on the card is the bat symbol, you guys. Like, that's what's on his card.
Yeah.
The expiration date is forever. I get that that's like a nod to the last movie, which why he would allude to that piece of shit is beyond me. But that's not a valid expiration date. So maybe he doesn't have a bank account. Maybe he's just a weirdo that likes to, like, this is the money that I like to spend. Like, it doesn't actually work. It's like Alfred and Lucius gave it to him. Like, oh, look at him playing dress up.
That's great.
He's going to go to the store like a real boy.
Yeah.
It's
Batman shopping for groceries.
So, everything about this movie, Robin with the rubber lips.
Do we talk about the ice skates?
Falling into the water and what's clearly just... Him
surfing through the sky.
The scene where he jumps out of the water and it's clearly him falling in, just rewound.
Yeah.
The sky surfing where someone actually fucking says surfs up. Mr. Freeze is freezing the entire city and yet they have time to go home and fucking change into these silver line new toy commercial outfits that are supposed to somehow protect them from sub-zero temperatures, even though they don't.
And how does Batgirl have one of those automatically?
Yeah, because like, I guess Batman just makes some weird shit in case. Like, just in case a girl ever shows up, we'll give her a suit.
Yeah.
Nothing in this movie makes sense.
Everything defies logic.
Every scene contradicts something that's already happened in the movie. It's like they filmed five terrible movies, cut the worst possible cut of all five together, and then, like, cursed it, and then released it to the public. I hate this movie. I would rather hit myself on the kneecap with a hammer than watch this movie. I would rather eat a glass than watch this movie.
Wow. Well, there you have it, folks. I'm going to go home and cry myself to sleep now.
I want a car. Chicks dig the car.
This is why Superman works alone.